Saddle up your horses. Well, welcome everyone to the Robin Walters Show, part of the Red Sky Radio Network. God bless you today. I always forget to say this, but I'm not going to forget it today. If you would like to reach me, you may at Red Sky Radio 777 at gmail.com. Red Sky Radio 777 at gmail.com. I try to respond to everybody who contacts me. If you've written to me and I didn't get back to you, it's because it somehow slipped my mind and I would not have purposely have ignored you. Okay? So there's my disclaimer right out of the gate. Gosh, so much going on here. But one of the things that I've always been challenged with around the holidays, and I mentioned that on the Sunday Morning with Robin Walter program, was around Christmas and Easter, I have a certain obligation to minister in the spirit of those respective holidays, but I sometimes don't know what's the fresh message. And part of the challenge, I don't quite do that so much on this program, I leave that to the ministry program, but when the program is scheduled to be aired a number of days before Easter, and then, or consequently, a number of days after Easter, sort of like mid to latter part of the week, but not on Sunday, and some places not on Saturday. Many people get the program on Friday. It seems like I'm either early to the party or late to the party, and it's sometimes hard to know. Well, what do I say ahead of time that's relevant? What do I say after the fact that's still relevant? Well, I think there's a lot that's still relevant, but we're sort of geared towards hearing what is in the moment. All right, do we watch a newscast based upon what's happened earlier in that day or since the previous newscast of the prior night? Or do we pull up broadcasts from a week ago or a year ago or 10 years ago? No, we kind of live in the moment. And proof of that fact is if you were outside your house and a car came by and hit another car that was parked and you watched it, 5 minutes later, you would be texting people, telling people about it, maybe taking a video or pictures. But let's suppose that you were gone on a two-week vacation and you came home and somebody said, that there was an accident that occurred in front of your house where a car came by and hit an ice cream vendor or a parked car or something like that. No, I didn't know about that. What about it? Well, the paper is old, the news is old, and we don't tend to pass that on. I get it. We kind of live in the moment. So it is with things like Easter messages. But there is a story I want to share that I could only do in hindsight. Ahead of time, I did not know could not know exactly what the Trump administration has planned for Easter. To what extent would there be some sort of festivities? I know that they were bashing Trump because he used real eggs in the Easter egg hunt with the price of eggs. Well, goodness sakes. If this is what the Democrats got, they ain't got nothing. And their continued exploration of the depths of stupidity, inanity, it just should bury that party forever. Forever. But let's take a look, now that I can speak retrospectively, of what Trump did for Easter. And then I'm going to tell you something you've probably forgotten, maybe not, but it will... show the contrast. So what did Trump do? The Trump White House, they had a Holy Week proclamation They had a special presidential video message and a host of a pre-Easter dinner. They had a White House staff Easter service done by Jennifer Korn, who is the faith director of the White House Faith Office. So we've got four distinct Christian events on Easter. Well, people say, well, where's the Passover? Well, you're going to have that when you get a Jewish president. Right, have it. I don't care. I mean, you can sell. That's a legitimate celebration. But the celebration for Christians is Easter. Because why? Because Jesus was our Passover. So Passover is incomplete unless it includes Jesus. Fine, as far as it goes, it was all they had to work with, the Old Testament, but Jesus is the Passover. The blood over the doorposts is now the blood on our of Jesus on our heart, cleansing us from sin. So you've got these four events which mark the Trump administration's Easter celebration. So to put this in context, though, and the contrast, I was drawn to what was it that Joe Biden did last Easter? And what was the commemoration of the White House last Easter? Anybody raise your hand? Well, seeing no hands out there, I'm going to share the answer with you. Joe Biden got out there and proclaimed on Easter Day that it was the Transgender Day of Visibility. That was his Easter plot. Now, I guess the Tranny Day of Visibility falls on different days each year, and it happened to fall on Easter. But it didn't mean that he needed to give that the spotlight. In fact, it's a holiday that shouldn't be a holiday. I know many of you saw that Nancy Mace video where the fake woman, the tranny comes up and approaches her, I think, in a department store. I watched this video, and I didn't really want to, but she engaged with the guy who's faking it to be a girl, a woman, and she's taught, he, the guy, faking it as a girl, is motioning with his hand in a very effeminate manner and said, well, I just jumped out. And then she said, well, do you think that using the word tranny is offensive? And what's his answer? Well, yes, I do. I mean, all of a sudden, his voice drops one octave into his natural voice because he's a guy. And he can't fake this female crapola. I just couldn't. This is what Joe Biden celebrated last Easter, the Tranny Day of Visibility. And our president celebrates the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Need I say more? I mean, I do not understand under any possible analysis or perspective that a person who contends to be a Christian could be a Democrat. They're oil and water. They do not mix. They're either abysmally and woefully ignorant, or they're just simply, and more likely, the hypocrite. They call themselves a Christian because that's the easiest way to kind of, at least historically, maneuver your way through American society, although less so all the time. So you can have your Easter-loving president in President Trump, or your tranny cross-dressing, transvestite, transsexual, sex-change, gender-mutilating Joe Biden. Well, that is a rather easy choice, is it not? If you're struggling with that choice, then you have a number of other struggles along with it. Okay. Well, a couple of items of good news, which I guess that first thing was good news, wasn't it? But the contrast is horrific. So I am thrilled with RFK Jr.'s announcing a federal ban on food dyes. I know this isn't a big deal with people, but boy, the more you read, if you've heard last week's program and then the program from 3 weeks ago, because I had a different program in between there because of some events dealing with the absolute poisoning of American society through a confluence of greedy food companies and Chinese interjection in our food chain. Why is China trying to buy our agricultural land? Because now they can do more contamination? I don't know why we even let them do that. I have a piece of land. I'm not trying to sell it right now, and I'm not going to tell you what state it's in. That's not important. But I had it listed for a while, and then the interest rates went up, which hurts the price of ag land, so I pulled it off the market. But I had one party who expressed an interest in it. One, a Chinese national. The agent didn't even want to tell me. He hesitated on telling me the ethnicity because that's probably against their ethics, I suppose, to focus on ethnicity. But doggone it, I'm not selling to a Chinese national. No way. What's he doing over here wanting to buy my ag land like they're buying thousands and thousands of acres of other ag land? You know what? At the national level, we call it nationalization, where the federal government takes over industries. Not a good thing. That's a socialistic, communistic, fascist approach to business. Less fascist and more socialistic and more communist, to be frank, because fascism in its more technical sense accommodates private ownership of some businesses, whereas commies and socialists don't, which are pretty much the same. But I don't know why we just don't have a state that just says, okay, we're confiscating your land, China, that you bought here, or Chinese-owned companies. Well, we're going to sue in court. Let them sue in court and then ignore the verdict of the judge. Ignore it. Last week, we spent a lot of time on the authorities, the judicial authorities. They don't have the authority to exceed their authority. And they'll make it up. The Constitution is just a tool for them to ignore when it's inconvenient and to follow when it's convenient, to bastardize and abuse and torture in its interpretation whatever they deem necessary to get to the result that they want in their Democrat heart to be the result. But this ban it was started with a red dye, but it has expanded from there, and they're giving them some time. Red dye number three was the one that came out as first and foremost, has zero food benefit. Zero. As in naught, nada, zipple, zilch. Nothing. It adds coloring and some degree flavor, but there's no nutritional. In fact, what we've seen, and I'm reading story after story, where apart from the sugar content, where parents can say, okay, my children might get a little bit of a sugar high when they have maybe too many cookies or something like that. But it's not the same thing that happens when they consume something that has red dye. They have an attention deficit syndrome, and there are multiple cases of children having behavioral and attention problems as a result of the crapola that the food companies are put in this to tantalize and titillate our taste buds, and then much of it supplied by China. So go to it, RFK Jr. I mean, waste them on this thing. Get all of that garbage out of our food. And food supply, and I saw the other day, it said some food companies have determined that maybe it's in the best interest of the health of America to reduce or eliminate certain dyes and additives in their foods. What took so long? I'll tell you what it took. It took RFK Jr. The hammer coming down. The greedy slobs in the food businesses who pump in cheap crap in the food. We got the worst health of basically any Western country there is. Don't believe me? Listen to last week's program. But this is, it's just alarming. And so this is, to me, absolutely fabulous news. More good news. Caroline Leavitt, she did her press conference here the other day, but announced that we are up to already 18 countries that have made formal trade proposals to the United States. But that's not all. There are meetings that are now scheduled with 34 different countries just in the coming weeks. You see, when Trump said it's going to be painful for a little bit, he said there's going to be some easiness and some initial pain. That was a fair and full disclosure, and there was. But we are going to come out of this with better jobs, a better economy, a healthier America, a stronger defense, and at the same time, what I really truly hope, for the first time in 24 years, a balanced budget. There's so much good that can be done. And they're certainly doing whatever they can. Now, the Supreme Court came out against the deportation of illegals without certain measures of due process. And the deciding vote against Trump's policy was John Roberts, the same guy who stuck us with Obamacare. Yeah, when it went to the court, he said it's a tax. That's what he justified his voting in support of Obamacare. I have never had any respect for John Roberts since then. He can go both ways on issues, as Amy Coney Barrett does, and I get that. There is not a 100% litmus test. It can't be that it's all things that Trump wants. I understand what he wants, but he's a negotiator. He's an art of the deal guy. He pushes it beyond the limits so that when the negotiation comes around, it falls back to approximately what was his original goal. I mean, it's take it from the guy. I do a lot of negotiation in my law practice, and my negotiation skills all started when I sold used cars before I ever went to law school. That's right, folks. True confessions here. And I loved it. Well, you got to hit high to get to where you want. Party comes in, buying a house. Says, well, let's list it for $500,000. Agent says, I think it might be a little high. Let's ask that. And then you don't tell the agent what you'll take. No, never, ever, 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 ever tell your real estate agent if you are selling or you're, I got to split this in two. Let's start with the sellers. Just popped into my head. I've done real estate work in all capacities for many years. Do never, never, never tell your agent if you're selling what your bottom line is. Say, well, what do you want to get out of this? And you can just say, well, you know what? I'm not ready to divulge that because I don't want you to be tempted with information that might prove to be against my best interest in sharing it with the other party. Oh, I would never do that. Baloney. Baloney. I will never do it. You don't have to insult them. Just say, hey, look, I don't want to make your job harder by telling you because you may be tempted to go that way. And conversely, if you're on the buying side, never tell your agent what your top dollar is. You could just say, well, it's, you know, maybe in the range of, let's say you're, 10 years ago, I'd be saying 250. Now it's, let's say it's 450 or whatever. Maybe he said, well, you know, somewhere between 400 and 500,000 or something. And just don't let them know. Do not let them know. They are your agent, but first and foremost, they want to earn a commission. There are some great real estate agents out there, and there are some that have engaged in prostitution. They'll sell you down the river in a heartbeat. I've had that experience a couple of times with agents, and I threatened to have them be delicensed, and when their broker stepped in and said, well, we'll reduce the commission on the sale, or we'll do this or that because, yeah, my agent screwed up. They got a bad case of commission breath. And there are also fabulous real estate agents, ones who really understand their role. Now, why am I talking about this? I guess because it comes down to the art of the deal with Donald Trump. He does not reveal his bottom line, what he will pay for or what he'll sell for, until the negotiation gets close to what he alone has in mind. It should be your 2025 reading, The Art of the Deal. I'm sure some of his thoughts and ideas have changed. They all do. I mean, from the day I started selling used cars to the last day of selling used cars, my manners, my protocol, my approach changed and evolved and developed, and I honed certain negotiating skills. And I use them to this day, continuing to hone them. I love negotiations. I do. Ask my wife. She would tell you, there's only one thing my husband loves more than spending 2 hours haggling over a purchase of a car. I'm probably going to say, what's that? Haggling 3 hours over the purchase of a car. I like it. I don't know why. Sick, sick, sick. That's what I am. But anyway, this is the White House. 18 countries have given proposals. 34 are slated. They are coming to Trump. They want to play on his team. And he set a high bar, sending the markets reeling. I get that. I mean, I got blasted, still am. I mean, it seems to be crawling back this week, but man, I don't even have much in the market, and I'm down big. But I can see the bigger, better goal for the end of his approach, and it seems to be developing. So, CNN was showing each day how much the market had gone down. Are they showing now how much it's going up? Of course not. They're just pigs in a pig trough. So this is just watch the man. Do I agree with him on everything? No. In my opinion, this last week, he's made a big mistake calling the Fed chairman a sorry loser. He's got to knock off the name calling. Be tough, but don't be juvenile. You can be hard and you can be firm without displaying a certain degree of immaturity and narcissism, which we know is there. You don't get anywhere with the name calling. If you think that you can just embarrass the Fed chairman Powell into lowering interest rates by calling him a sorry loser, all you've done is get the hackles up of the party that he's after. Now, there's times when you can say things that are, in fact, true, and they're harsh, but not in the manner of a character slander like that. So I disagree with him on that. But who knows? Maybe Powell ends up lowering the interest rates, is great for the economy, and guess what? The Democrats lose another campaign issue. All right. And speaking of campaign issues, what do they have going for them right now? What do they have? Kilmer Abrego Garcia, the MS-13 gang member who got deported to El Salvador. This is all they got. They are, and to tell you how bad the optics are, even though all the mainstream media is pushing it like it's the biggest issue since the South fired on Fort Sumter in 1861. To show you how bad this is, a new poll out shows an incredible number of people supporting Trump running for a third term. Now, I have done a lot of constitutional law. I just don't see how he gets there, and I'm not sure it's a healthy precedent. Because if he gets there by some precedent that then allows some super Democrat to be in office for 12 years or 16 years, we can just roll up and fold up this country. So I'm not sure it's a good precedent, but I don't even know how he gets there. That's for another program. But So these Democrats, and including this Yasemin Ansari, a Democrat from, unfortunately, Arizona, is down there in El Salvador encouraging other people to come down there and try to free this guy. They have no issues that they can really campaign on, so they have to fabricate something to highlight and shout out the accolades for an MS-13 gang member. They got to look like heroes. They got to be down there. They're kissing MS-13 babies, basically. I mean, you know the whole thing about politicians kissing babies to look like they're actually human and have a heart and passion and compassion. Well, that's what they're doing down there. This guy's a thug through and through. I'm glad the administration is dragging their heels on it. I hope we have a face-to-face between the authority of the Supreme Court and Donald Trump. Now, Trump is going to yield to the court as long as he possibly can. As I mentioned before, if there's a decision at a federal district court level, he's not going to do much about it but appeal it. And if that decision is upheld at the appeals court, he won't say much about it, but it goes to the Supreme Court. If they accept the case, he's quiet until the result. If they don't accept the case, then he may lambaste the Supreme Court. I don't know. But the question comes down is if they issue a ruling and he just says, you know what, you don't have the authority. This is outside your constitutional authority. Now, there are other presidents that have felt this way. Thomas Jefferson was famous for stating that the final word does not rest with the Supreme Court. They don't rule over executive functions because, by definition, an executive function belongs to, what a quinky-dink, the executive. So Ansari is down there shooting her stupid mouth off. No, this is a travesty. We need all these guys in our country so they can rape and kill our young girls. And, well, whatever, you get the idea. So that's how sick the Democrats are. But you ain't seen nothing yet here. We have multiple George Soros-funded groups that are supporting a Democrat plan for the next election to decriminalize illegal immigration. You see, if you decriminalize it, you turn it down to basically kind of the difference between a felony and a misdemeanor. Well, misdemeanor, you don't get a jury trial. Felonies, you do. And there's some variations on that in states. And the degree of the misdemeanor, it can lead to a jury trial. But what if you decriminalize something, what happened when the ridiculously stupid state of Oregon, I say that derisively, decided to decriminalize drugs? Explosion. Now they're kind of go back. Gosh, what on earth were we thinking? Well, I don't know what you were thinking. We got to go back and criminalize these because it's runaway. We got addicts all over the place, homeless people, crimes going up. And now they're trying to reverse their stupidity, and it isn't quite so easy. If you decriminalize something, that which you have decriminalized will increase. Why? Because there's no penalty associated with that behavior. And there are some people who will think, well, okay, I guess it's okay to smoke pot. Why? Because it's legal. Their morals and their legality and their morality, they get confused and they justify one behavior, the doing it by the legality. They assume illegality equals morality. If it's legal, it's moral. That's not what the Bible says. Not at all. Don't go away. We're just getting rolling here. We'll be right back.
The Robin Walter Show is a listener-supported program. Your contribution goes to help as many people as possible to hear that the Word of God has answers to help you survive and even thrive in the dark days ahead in this country. We pledge to bring you the critical information you need to make informed decisions in this age where big tech and big media have conspired to rid our country of everything Christian. Please send your support to Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. That's Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, one of my favorite songs by Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels. If you didn't notice, music nerd that I am, I think there is a double bass drum, in addition to the electric bass, a double bass drum thumping in the background of that song. I mean, it's a driver. I guess that's what I call that song. Hard to sit still. There's a few songs like that. That one, a totally different song, Mustang Sally by Wilson Pickett. My goodness sakes. You better put me in a straitjacket because I am not going to be able to sit still. Okay, I want to finish up something, though, about the Soros-funded groups that are behind the Democrat plan to decriminalize illegal immigration. You know, when the left-wing loony judge got elected to Wisconsin, they thought it was a test of Trump's strength. They ridiculed Elon Musk because he put $28 million into that campaign to have that woman lose, and she won. But they were saying, we need to defeat the billionaires. Well, who funded the woman's campaign? The billionaire. I mean, it's sort of like, all right, we're going to have a defeat the billionaire rally held at George Soros' house. You see, this party is just rife with hypocrisy. Oh my gosh! And apparently they think that this is a game winning strategy to decriminalize illegal immigration, and they can only be thinking that if what? They have plans to have every possible illegal vote in the next election. How could it be a winning strategy if that somehow were not in the mix? So this judge, this is how serious it is. So this Tren de Aragua gang member, of which there are many in this country, a Democrat judge in New Mexico had one living in his house. Armed. He armed this thug. And he got outed, and it was the same day that he resigned and fled his office. You know, it just takes light. It takes light on the cockroaches. What do cockroaches do when light comes? Flee. The Democrats are just simply a political organization of cockroaches. Shine the light. Of course, they will try to suffuse the light, suppress the light, sue the light, or kill the light, lest they be exposed. But once they get exposed, the gig is up. Okay, this next piece here, I need to cover this. We have a lot of California listeners, California friends. I lived in California and practiced law there many years, going back there in just a few days, because I still do a fair amount of legal work in California, Arizona, and Michigan. So I just throw that out there. I'm not done with my career dealing with real estate and estate planning and business planning. Hard for me to travel 2,000 miles to appear in court, but there's a lot I can do outside of court in those areas of law where I can remain flexible, which I need to at this stage of my life to go places and speak and so forth. But for my California friends, it is... I've got to share this quickly, but maybe you don't know this. And it's put out, interestingly, coincidentally by a Carl DeMille who is running for a state representative position that is the same district that I ran for 13 years ago now, 2012. My last attempt to be elected in California. That was my fourth race and my fourth defeat. But it was for the state house representatives called the assembly there. Same district. But I got this from him, and I want to share this because it applies to the whole state and all the people living in California. You need to know what the Democrat legislature there has introduced. They have, and I'm going to go through this quickly in the interest of time, but they have introduced 9 separate bills, every one of which will increase your property tax in some way. One of them, maybe the worst, is a property transfer tax that would give the state and local governments 5% of the value of every home sold. 5%. Now, I think this hasn't passed. It's going to be amended. It'll be some exemptions or there'll be some limits. It might say the excess over $1 million will pay 5% to the state and county governments. So a house that sells for $2 million with a $1 million exemption, that's $50,000. And we have these homes. Bill Gates bought his daughter a home somewhere out there, and just I think he paid $16 million. I mean, you know, the property taxes on $16 million are a couple hundred thousand a year, property taxes. But you sell it, 5% tax on $16 million is, you know, just under $1 million. $800,000. So anyway, that's the point. And that's, of course, on top of your capital gains. And then the Democrats are working with the labor unions to put a repeal of Proposition 13 on the 2026 ballot. So the limitation on the increase in your property taxes, they want to come off because they want money. Money, 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 money. Is the thought of decreasing the budget ever a thought? Of course not. It's only increasing the revenue. The more money the government has, the more the government controls. And that goes for your government workers. There's some payroll tax that they're looking to bring in, which would add $1 billion of payroll taxes on small businesses each year. No wonder they're coming to Arizona and Nevada. Get out of Dodge. This one blows me away. This came around before, but it's back. The vacancy tax, Senate Bill 789. So after businesses have been forced to close because what? Excessive taxes, regulations, COVID crapola by Gavin Newsom shutting them down while he eats without a mask at dines sumptuously at the French Laundry and all the other hypocritical stuff that he does. They, for the businesses that have been forced to close, or because there's homeless, there's too many turds in the street in San Francisco, and they just close, and they're vacant, those buildings, and the city doesn't do anything to restrict the behavior of the people. They now want to impose a tax on vacant offices and retail stores that used to house all the businesses that they destroyed. I mean, so you go out of business because you can't afford it. Whether it's regulations, COVID garbage, you name it, turds in the street in San Francisco, there's all kinds of reasons for businesses to go under in California. But if they do, then it's not the tenant. The tenant's gone. But if the business owner is also the owner of the real estate, then to get taxed for leaving your building vacant because you can't make money, because you're losing money, they want to make you lose yet more money. Keep in mind the income tax here, which is California already has the highest income tax of any state. But Assembly Bill 428 will increase the top bracket for the state income tax to just under 14%. Then one, this one, I mentioned this to my wife, and she said she didn't get it. That's okay. She's a very smart woman. But mileage tax, AB 1421, Newsom proposes to track every driver's mileage and charge them somewhere between 6 to 9 cents per mile that they drive, which is roughly the equivalent of an 80-cent per gallon hike in the gas tax. Now, the gas tax was always there to maintain the roads. And my wife's perspective, well, does California just try to rob people at gunpoint and just take money from them wherever they can? Is this the next low-lying fruit? Well, that's probably true. But behind this is the fact that the roads wear out, or they need maintenance, obviously. And that maintenance has always and historically been supported by the gas tax. Well, you don't have a gas tax affecting people who have an electric vehicle, right? They got an electric vehicle, you're not paying gas for gas, so you're not paying the gas tax. So the people driving gas-driven cars end up supporting and subsidizing essentially the people who haven't, they don't use gas. But they're going to do this by proposing it by a mileage counter on your car that assesses your tax based on the amount of miles that you drive, which will be somewhere between $900 and $1,200 additional in taxes per year by for each resident in the state of California. So, and it also seems to ignore the fact that actually EVs are heavier cars. If I'm not mistaken, they're heavier, which means that the wear and tear on the roads is greater from the EVs. Is there a solution to this? I understand the state's problem. But why not have the mileage tax simply associated with those who aren't paying it, the ones driving EVs or hybrids? Why not? Isn't fair fair? Why double up on the those driving combustible engines? Why do they have to subsidize it? Why do they have to pay for it? Let the EV owners pay for the damage and wear and tear for which they no longer have gas taxes, but they are certainly contributing to the erosion and destruction of the roads over a period of time and for new roads. It's simple, except for one thing. The left hates gas-powered cars. So this is a punishment. It could be easily fair if it were just a mileage tax on the EV owners. But it's not, because they want to drive the car, the combustible engine-driven vehicle out of the state of California, and doing it through this crapola called the mileage tax. Well, okay, so we've got all these protesters protesting all around the country now, and I want to quote from Don Fetter. I've read Don for a long time, and he's a great guy, a good writer. He's got his hands and mind on the issue. But I want to read to you. I'm just going to quote him. That because the anti-Doge protests, of which there were, 1,300 of them 2 weeks ago around the country. But this is Don's take on it, and like I've said before, when somebody says something better than I'm going to quote them. I'm not going to try to remake it into my own. I'm going to quote them. And Don writes as follows. Protesters now include useful idiots, geezers and grannies who missed the 60s, and group number three, hardcore leftists. What they want, in a word, is more. Their slogan of hands off means hands off big government. They want more spending, more debt, and more taxes. From their perspective, the government is meant to expand, to never contract. Don't ask bureaucrats to defend their performance. Don't worry about the national debt or the impact of the growing burden of debt and taxes on the economy and the middle class. And I'm going to throw here in, on my own. Don't worry about the fraud, the waste, and the corruption. That's the price of a big government. We love big government. All right, back to the quote. Trust us. They seem to say, even though we got into this mess, it's in our best interest to keep you there. So grab a sign, scream obscenities about the Trump dictatorship, curse Elon Musk, and go burn a Tesla. Now I've got to interject something here. Is it no wonder even Bill Maher is inching closer to being a Republican? He never will be on social issues, but he can't find any refuge in the whack jobs that occupy the levers of control in the Democrat Party. Okay, back to the article. The goal of DOGE was to cut $2 trillion from the federal budget, thus balancing it for the first time in 24 years. One target for the axe is the federal workforce. The Supreme Court just allowed the president to fire 16,000 probationary workers. But of the 3 million civilian federal employees, over 40% earn $90,000 or more annually. The average private sector salary is $63,800. Now, aren't these 3 million technically, what do we call them? Public servants? But the servant is making, on an average, 35 to 50% more than the master. The private sector is 63.8. Over 40% of Fed employees earn over 90,000. Only after 5 years on a job, a federal worker can retire with a pension at age 62. A pension at 62 after 5 years. In 2023, Washington spent $6.16 trillion in real dollars, which has grown in real dollars 58% since 1983. So this is accounting for inflation. Throw out the inflation factor, which everything goes up with inflation, that notwithstanding inflation, the spending has increased 58%. So your federal taxes will pay for things like $175 million for upkeep on buildings that have been vacant for years, $2 million for a neon light museum, almost $500,000 to study the behavior of male prostitutes in Vietnam. That's right. $12 million for some pickleball courts in Las Vegas. $300,000 to promote diversity among bird watchers. $765,000 to subsidize losing IHOP restaurants in the underserved areas of District of Columbia. Well, why are they underserved? Because they get robbed. Because they dine and dash. If we're the crime, why do you want to have a business where you're going to get robbed? People steal from you. You can't make a decent living. And so we're going to subsidize those areas, the restaurants, to what? To cut back on the crime? No. We're going to subsidize those restaurants to stay there so that people can continue to steal. The national debt, I'm back to quoting, is almost as large as the entire U.S. economy. Number one is Social Security. Number two is Medicare on our budget. The interest on the debt is the third largest item in the federal budget. I mean, this is just incredible. And this is just what the left wants. They want, this is a Cloward-Piven strategy. Put the burdens, make the burdens on the government so heavy, so utterly unsolvable, so burdensome that there is no way out other than for the government to collapse and move to socialism where they just take over everything. That's their plan. But there's one thing that's that the left cannot handle, and that is because unlike your kind of inexperienced bozo brains like Biden, who's done nothing but suck out of a government pig trough for 5 decades, and Barack Hussein Obama, who really didn't have any work experience, unless you're counting a community organizer as work experience, these guys don't know jack squat crap diddly about running a business. And who knows how to run a business? Gee, Donald Trump and Elon Musk, two who have run successful businesses, are attempting to salvage this country on the way to saving this country. Well, I don't like to end with this. Well, I'm going to fit it in so I can have some better word for everyone here. But there is a California school board meeting in the Chino Valley Unified School District in California. It's in San Bernardino County. I used to live in San Bernardino County. I know it well. And they had people there that were chanting. It's just incredible. For pro-tranny athleticism, I guess you call it. They were pro-trans athlete protesters. They want their trannies in there. They got their rights. They want to be able to pick whatever gender they want, even though there's only 2 sexes, male and female, and all the others have been invented by Democrats. But it started to get out of hand. But in a way that I actually, and quite honestly, is very predictable. Some of the pro-tranny athlete protesters started chanting, "Hail Satan," at the girls who were protesting a pro-tranny platform. There's some girls that were protesting, giving their personal case studies of what injury or exclusion, unfairness, because they don't keep the boys out of girls' sports. And so the trannies start chanting, "Hail Satan." Obviously, if I went back 25 years, I could never imagine this. I'm not sure I could imagine it 15 years ago. And I'm not sure it would. I guess, yes, I could 5 years ago, because whatever direction society is going, then you can only assume it's going to go further in that direction. And I said this way back when California acknowledged domestic partner relationships among those who are 62 or older. I said the camel doesn't have his nose in the tent. The camel has his whole hiney in the tent. And it could predict every change in that right down the road. And I haven't been wrong, not because I'm so smart. It's just that because it's so easy. Satan has come to steal, kill, and destroy. He's hated a country that was founded upon the Word of God from the very beginning. Yeah, they got slavery in there at first, but slavery had to be accepted at some level in order for the country to come together enough to oppose Britain and others and become a country. There was some acknowledgments where we were. Progress has been made. But the setback has all come from the left. Keep in mind, it was the Democrats who supported slavery. They were all Democrats. The Civil Rights Bill of 64 or 68, passed only because of Republicans. The Democrats were against it. But as much as they actually have embraced slavery, it's why they also embraced abortion. See, a slave was property, and to a pregnant woman, the child in her womb is, guess what, property, until recently. And then you go right on down to queer marriage, this whole tranny crap. It's pretty easy to predict the next stage. If Donald Trump and prayer from people in this country turn things around, glory, hallelujah. But I only know really truly of one nation or city state that ever repented to the point of being saved. And that was Nineveh. Now, there have been revivals that have awakened countries. They helped awaken England to get rid of slavery. But it was a momentary bright spot on a downward path of humanity that apart from Jesus Christ as a recognized authority in the halls of government, then the end is very, very determinable. But what does that change for you? What does it change for me? Nothing. We sit tall in the saddle. We ride for the brand. The brand is Jesus Christ. We don't give up. We're ready with our scabbard and our saber that's inside of it when necessary, and the Word of God at all times. See you next week.